You're tuned in to the Y'all Active Retirement Association radio show here on COY 104 FM.
Good evening from Y'all Active Retirement Association, known to all our members and friends as Yarra. So welcome now to our Yarra show. This evening we have contributions from Geraldine Brown, Pat Barry, Tommy Donnelly and Helen Wade. Now, before we get to Geraldine, we will begin with a piece of seasonal music from the Pogues and the late Kirsty MacColl, The Fairy Tale of New York.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you baby, I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
You promised me Broadway was waiting for me. You were handsome,
you were pretty, queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunks they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing "Go Away Babe," and the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
That bed.
You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap, lousy faggot. Happy Christmas, you're ours, I pray God it's our love.
The boys of the NYPD choir still singing "Go Away Babe," and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
I could have been someone. I kept them with me, babe, I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone, I built my dreams around you.
The boys of the NYPD chorus are singing "Go Away Babe," and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
This month in Irish history,
Ronnie Delaney was just 21 years old when he won the Olympic 1500 metres gold medal in Melbourne on December 1st, 1956, in a new Olympic record time of 3 minutes 41.2 seconds. On December 8th, 1881, Padraig Cullum was born in Longford. He was an Irish poet, novelist, dramatist, biographer, playwright, children's author and collector of folklore. He was one of the leading figures of the Irish literary revival. Two of his famous poems that we all learnt at school were The Old Woman of the Road and The Cradle Song. O men from the fields, come gently within. Tread softly, softly, O men coming in. Mavourneen is going from me and from you, where Mary will fold him with mantle of blue. From reek of the smoke and cold of the floor and the peering of things across the half door. O men of the fields, soft, softly come through. Mary puts round him her mantle of blue. Padraig Cullum died on January the 11th, 1972, aged 90, in Connecticut, but is buried in Dublin. On December the 18th, 1871, the first ever rugby international was held in Belfast, between the north of Ireland and the west of Scotland, and Scotland won that match. Now we move on to world history. Nancy Astor, who was born in Virginia in 1879 but moved to England in 1905. On December 1st, 1919, she became the first woman to take her seat in the House of Commons as a Unionist Member of Parliament. On December 3rd, 1967, the South African surgeon, Dr. Christian Bernard, performed the first human-to-human heart transplant. The operation captured public imagination and around the globe, and literally overnight, Bernard became one of the best-known people in the world. The Observer, the world's oldest Sunday newspaper, was first published on December the 4th, 1791. It is now part of the Guardian Media Group. Local history. On the 11th of December 1920, Cork City was burnt by the Black and Tans. Mailer Street was one of the worst affected areas, particularly number 6, a 300-year-old warehouse. In recent years, the building was restored to its former glory by the Ahern Brothers of Yall, who are world-renowned stonemasons. St. John's Day, the 27th of December, 1464, marked the foundation of Our Lady's College of Yall by Thomas Fitzgerald, 7th Earl of Desmond, proprietor of Yall, and Lord Deputy of Ireland, for the purpose of training seminarians. It was served by a warden and clerks consisting of 8 fellows and 8 singing men. The site is presently occupied by Yall Enterprise Centre. Samuel Heyman, Church of Ireland clergyman and antiquarian, was born in Yall on July the 27th, 1818, and died at his rectory in Douglas, Cork on the 15th of December, 1886. 4 members of the Heyman family were mayors of Yall, and from 1705 to 1816 owned and lived in Myrtle Grove, Sir Walter Raleigh's house. We still have a Heyman's Hill in Yall.
Geraldine, thank you very much indeed. That was very interesting. And now we will have another piece of music. Garth Brooks will talk to us about Friends in Low Places.
Blame it all on my roots. I showed up in boots, and ruined your black tie affair. The last one to know, the last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there. And I saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes when I took his glass of champagne. I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through, but you'll never hear me complain. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. I slip on down to the oasis, so I've got friends in low places. Guess I was wrong, I just don't belong. But then, I've been there before. Everything's alright, I'll just say goodnight and I'll show myself to the door. Hey, I didn't mean to cause a big scene, just give me an hour and then I'll be as high as that ivory tower that you're living on. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. And I'll be okay. Yeah, I'm not big on soul. Think I'll slip on down to the oasis, so I've got a friend in low places.
Bringing the Christmas by Alice Taylor. Growing up on a farm many years ago, the buying of Christmas presents for each other and for friends was never a problem, simply because there was no such thing as buying Christmas presents, at least not as we know them today. Santa brought presents, and that was it. No money floating around meant no presents. We never missed them, simply because we knew nothing about them. An early sign of Christmas was the arrival of the traveller woman. Ordinarily, they carried baskets full of clothes pegs, holy pictures and camphor balls. Now the baskets under their shawls took a seasonal turn, brimming over with Christmas paper chains for running across the kitchen, pleated paper skirts for the candle and big, brightly coloured paper flowers.
We danced around them in delight, and with our enthusiasm diluted any chance my mother had of hammering out a good bargain. Once purchased, these wonders were locked in my mother's parlour press until Christmas Eve, the big day of decorating. Finally, the day of the school holidays came, and we arrived home ecstatic with expectation. Now it was only a matter of days. The next step was bringing the Christmas. My mother and father set out early one morning and headed into town on their own. There was usually one or two of us in tow when they went to town, but not when they were bringing the Christmas. It was an adult-only expedition. The previous Saturday, the geese had been carried by pony and crib to the Christmas market, and as a result, my mother had money in her pocket. She held back a number of geese, some of which she had plucked and made oven ready for her town sister and cousins. My father took his favourite friend a bag of his best spuds. Strangely enough, geese and later turkeys got posted, nationwide as well as overseas. I'm not at all sure they always arrived in an edible condition. I can remember posting pounds of butter to England, which at the time seemed perfectly normal, but today would be unthinkable. We waited all day, bursting with excitement, until, as darkness fell, we heard the ponies' hooves clip-clop down the boreen. We were allowed help carrying some of the boxes and put them on the parlour table. Others, my mother insisted on carrying carefully herself. In the boxes were big barm bracks and seed loaves, which the shops where we dealt gave us tokens of appreciation for our custom. Sometimes there was a homemade cake and pudding, made by our town aunt, or a wooden box full of black porter bottles from a cousin who had a pub in town. They were all put in a deep press to which my mother alone had the key. Christmas was now safely locked up in the parlour. So presents did move around, but they were of a totally practical nature. Even Santa had a practical turn of mind, and I remember getting a jumper once and being absolutely delighted with it. Occasionally, he did rise to dolls and wooden toys, which were cherished for years. Toys were as rare as hen's teeth, and when they did come, they were a source of endless play. Later, when I had my own children, buying Santa brought me immense pleasure. The shrieks of joy on Christmas morning made all the mental scrutiny of deciding on the appropriate gift for each child worthwhile. Starting off with four boys, it was all about building blocks and model trains. When a girl finally arrived, I was delighted to be back into the world of dolls. For her first Christmas, Santa brought my daughter a beautiful doll and pram. They were both bigger than her, and our eldest informed me with amusement, "You bought those for yourself, you know." He was right. Christmas shopping when you are a working wife with young children has to be a study in time and motion. When I was in that situation, helping to run our village shop and post office, Christmas was hectic. So my Christmas shopping expedition had to be planned with military precision and usually executed in a one-day outing. Hence the need for a well-thought-out list. On the morning of the special day, I hit town as soon as the shop doors opened. A child-free day to do the shops was a rare treat, and the challenge to get my list complete was a great stimulant. I began my campaign with pep in my step and began to tick off my acquisitions with immense satisfaction. The secret was to keep focused. Before launching on a Christmas present safari, a shopping list has always been high on my agenda. With the belief that most money is hard earned, comes a conviction that if at all possible, the spending of it should be sheer enjoyment. A list is the foundation stone of that enjoyment. One might not always adhere to the list, but it is like a roadmap or a sat-nav when setting out on a journey. Without some sense of direction, you could finish up going around in circles, or worse still, going nowhere. Worse again, you could end up in the wrong shops. Making out a Christmas shopping list can be hugely enjoyable. I love it. It fills me with a great sense of anticipation. In the process, you may discover a few home truths about yourself as well. You begin with your nearest and dearest. Deciding what might give them most joy can be a joy in itself. Then gradually you work outwards until you find yourself with the guilty conscience brigade, the duty presence. As Shakespeare said, conscience makes cowards of us all. Conscience sometimes demands a high price, and you have to be very careful not to find yourself allocating these recipients more than they deserve. It could be to ease your conscience about your lack of warm feelings towards them. Chances are that this bad judgment overcomes you when drifting around the shops and you get caught up in the tide of the prevailing Christmas euphoria. A wave of goodwill to all your fellow humans suffuses you, including those who have been a bloody pain in the butt for the past year. This is when a list is a stalwart support, because with it, you have already overcome the guilt that causes bad decisions. Backwards psychology? Maybe, but tried and tested. Sometimes, when out Christmas shopping, your eye can happen on an item that just hits the spot, and you think, wow, so-and-so would simply love that. It may not be on your list, but it would be far more desirable than the original item. It is great when that happens. For other items, you simply have to trudge around relentlessly. Sometimes you might eventually strike oil, but other times you may simply have to change gear and think in a new direction. When I begin to flag and feel that my decision-making capabilities are dwindling, I retire to a city centre restaurant where I seek out a table in a quiet corner and review the situation over an enjoyable meal. The temptation of a glass of wine is resisted, as lunchtime wine and I do not lead to clear-headed decisions. This is a day for clear thinking. Back in action, I forge ahead and sometimes retrace my footsteps to reconsider an item previously rejected. Eventually, I allow myself into a bookshop. One year I made the mistake of beginning in a bookshop, and that was a disaster. Bookshops are great places for dawdling, and it was too early in the day for dawdling. It was like having the dessert before the main course. But by late afternoon, the bookshop is exactly what the doctor ordered. Having crossed off most of my list, it is time to head home, where, when the children were small, presents were hastily bundled into an old wardrobe in Auntie Peggy's spare room next door, the equivalent of my mother's parlour press. In the very early years of my many Christmas shopping expeditions, I committed the unforgivable offence of putting myself before all of humankind. I decided that Christmas was all about joy to the world, and that that world included me. So I bought myself a present, and I have continued to do so every Christmas since. This way, you can be dead sure that you finish up with at least one present with which you are absolutely thrilled. That, for me, is always a book. One of my first self-indulgences in that field was a hardback copy of W.B. Yeats' poems. He was followed by Patrick Kavanagh, Brendan Kennelly, Ted Hughes, Billy Collins, and others. These Christmas presents have enriched my life, and that is what Christmas is all about.
Thank you very much indeed for that, Pat. A lovely story. And now we will have another piece of music from, this time, Nat King Cole and A Christmas Song.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to
pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears, while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. There's a song that sighs of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music bright and gay, their frail forms fading at the door. Though their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. There's a song that sighs of the cabin door. Oh, hard times life away with a warm heart. Her better days are all. Though her voice may be merry, she's sighing all the day. All hard times come again no more. There's a song that sighs on the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door.
We welcome you back with that wonderful version of Tommy Fleming's Hard Times. And now it's time to introduce to you Tom Donnelly with a look back at the history of Yall carpets.
The soft, deep pile of a Yall carpet. How often did we hear that sales pitch in the 70s? The soft, deep pile of a Yall carpet. How was Yall selected for the carpet factory? It started back with the O'Brien family in Cork. They had a spinning and dyeing plant in Douglas called St. Patrick's Woolen Mills. They were turning out wool for knitting and other purposes, and they had more than they required. So they started up a carpet weaving plant. The name of the plant was Kincora Carpets, and they were turning out Wilton carpets. Wilton carpet is a heavy carpet which is generally used for hotels, airport lounges and areas of that nature. It is a very heavy weave carpet. Brian O'Brien, one of the family, felt that making ex-minister carpet would be a better proposition. This is a lighter carpet that is normally used in households. He and his family had a summer residence in Yall, and he was friendly with John Murray, a Yall businessman, and they would have discussed it. This would have been in the 1953 approximately. John Murray would have said, "Why not try it in Yall?" And so they did. The start was purchasing a premises, which was an idle grain store in Brown Street. Yall of the 50s was a quiet town. Seafield Fabrics had started and was up and running. Blackwater Cottons was in the making. Just to give you an idea, the traffic at the time, any traffic going from the Waterford side had to go down the main street. The same with traffic coming from the East Cork side. There was no bypass at that time, and the back street was not suitable. There was two taxis in town, Charlie Hearn and Denny Noonan, and about one dozen cars. So they proceeded with their carpet dream. Mr. Geoffrey Toft was brought in from Bolton. He was a man who was in the carpet industry, starting as a and worked up through the trade, and he was a supervisor at this stage. There was four ex-minister weaving looms ordered, and the first one arrived early in 1954. Jack Smith of Yall Brickworks, John Lane and Mikey White and the messenger boy were the first employees. The clerical work was to be wages and items of that nature were to be carried out in John Murray's offices down their plant by Mary Russell and Jack Welch. Both of these changed the old carpets in the first year. The first wage book, in actual fact, filled in by Jack Welch, is still maintained today. At the time, the local newspaper, Yall Tribune, following a review, said that up to 20 to 30 employees would be employed. This was certainly a great boon for the town. A man's wage at that time was for 45 hours or £4.10. The machinery started to arrive. First of all, you had the first loom was in, and it was erected. The other necessary machine soon started arriving. A backsizing machine, a cropper, a winding machine for winding the yarn, a beam winder, inspection tables, and final, a rolling machine to roll the carpets. Workers were recruited from the town and from around the local area, and they were trained as weavers, creelers, menders, winders. The raw material. The wool was coming from O'Brien's in Douglas. The jute was coming from Goodbody's in Waterford. The cotton was coming from County Louth. The first weaving of carpet was up and running at this stage, and the first consignment of bales was taken on Jack Brown's horse and trailer to the local railway station bound for Dublin. Yes, the number of employees in year one was around 26. Production had got off to a good start. By the second year, two shifts in the weaving area were necessary. More wool was required as the raw material, so a spinning plant was started in Tivoli. Things were progressing nicely at this stage, and a design studio was established under Cormac Meehan. And he recruited his own staff, specialists in the designs, etc. At this stage, the company became a public company. It went on the market and the shares bought. This was to raise more money for the purchase of more looms, etc. Extra weaving hours were necessary, so a third shift was put on. As the years progressed, things were still going very well, so they were required more and more wool. So Killett Line spinning and dyeing plant was started. When this was fully up and running after a couple of years, there was 500 employees there. More carpet was required, so a weekend shift was necessary. The weekend was split in two, and there were two groups of workers came in. One of the items of interest was when the night shift finished on Sunday morning at 7 o'clock and the new shift came in, there was mass said on the premises. There was a place allocated, and a priest came in and said the mass for the workers. Now, there was a lot of wool being made at this stage, and it was found this was being imported from Australia, from New Zealand, etc. And the more wool that was processed, it was earning extra money for the company. So the company started looking around for more areas. So we had what was known as the American experience. This was set up to weave new designs, new type of designs, etc., and heavier carpet. The hotels were one of the main areas. Hotels like Miami Hotel, Caesar's Palace, MGM. Wool was supplied to all these top ones. This was handled by Kuristan Carpets, who were a carpet trading company in America, and they handled this market. There was full employment in Yale, and the workers established a sports club. They bought Carnegie Library, and that was used for evening time and things like that. There was successful GA teams, squash teams. There was a savings club, where the workers could pay in a certain amount and get it back when required. was natural with so many workers involved at that stage, that there was romances, and many workers got their partners. The wages were good, and there was over 800 workers employed in the factory between the seven-day weaving and all the other works. The term used at that time is, we had America at home. To process and develop the wool side of things, they got purchased some other companies. They had their own company, Woolloft, to buy the yarn and get it into Killitlie. Belvedere Carpets in Ennis was bought. Navan Carpets was bought. In England, there was five weaving companies bought. Wilton Royal, Morris Carpets, Gloucester Carpets, Solon Carpets, Hampshire Textiles, and even one company bought in Holland. Between all these companies, there's over 1,500 workers under the old brand. Things were going fine into the 70s, but then dark clouds started to appear. The graph, which had been climbing steadily for over 20 years, now was starting to point downwards. Scaling back was necessary. England was on a three-day week and in recession at the time. The price of oil shot up around the place. House styles were changing as well. People now were more money and could look around. They had polished timber floors, etc. So the sales for carpet was cutting back. Costs had to be cut, and the first sign of redundancies came about. Gradually, a number of companies within the group had to close. For everybody, this became a painful experience. It affected y'all as well, and workers were let go. Comrades who had worked together for years were separated, and because some of the workers were travelling long distances and meeting the lads in town, they possibly wouldn't see them again for quite a while. Many cutbacks took place. Eventually, with all the cutbacks, reality came, and in 1984, the last of the all carpets was woven in Yall at that time. That was the all carpet section. Business was slowed down in Yall. After a number of years, Kurdistan, who had the company I mentioned earlier on, they restarted in a reduced scale. But eventually, carpet weaving finished in Yall in December 2006. It had become cheaper to produce carpet in the Far East, and eventually the business moved there, and a lot of the machinery was transferred there. For over 50 years, a generation of workers from Yall and the surrounding area had a steady job, well-paid employment for themselves and their family. And then came the end of the dream.
Thank you very much, Tom, for that very interesting piece of local history. And coming up after our next piece of music by Mary Black and Magilla Marr, we will hear from Helen Wade, who will look back at our Yarra year.
Squeal-o-ing, At the beginning of the year, Yara had 129 members, and by the end of November, this had grown to 163. Despite the fact that we had no meetings, which had previously been held fortnightly, we still maintained a high level of communication with all members through text messages, emails, and the Yara website. This encouraged new members to join the organisation. We had numerous activities and events and lots of crack, all of which proved advantageous to those who felt isolated by lockdown due to the pandemic. Many of the events were outdoor and members felt safe attending as all were conducted observing strict COVID guidelines. Walking proved very popular, especially as we were blessed with good weather. Heart walking consisted of a stroll along part of Slieneann Sláinte in Yall. Surf walking, lovely on a fine day, where participants walked or paddled along the water's edge, stopped for coffee at the Bakemore Cafe in Redbarn and returned again. A course in Nordic walking also took place. A walking activator course also took place under the tutelage of Maria. This trained participants in the use of poles. This was held in the GAA hall and surrounding grounds. These enjoyable sessions also included movement to music and a little line dancing. Outdoor yoga classes were held at Blohanand and also chair yoga. Everybody enjoyed the stretching and breathing, also beneficial for physical and mental health. Senior cycling classes took place in the Green Park under the excellent tutelage of Fiona. No falls, all very steady. For those interested in local history, there were town tours and a tour of North Abbey Cemetery. These proved very informative and educational. Yara ventured further afield. A day trip to Drumenna House and Lismore was enjoyed by many. These beautiful and historical venues were much appreciated. Several Blackwater River trips were taken on lovely fine mornings, while passengers enjoyed the company and stories from Tony Gallagher, the boat owner. A garden project was held at the Blackwater Health Centre and participants enjoyed learning how to grow produce. Some events were held indoors when restrictions lifted, all in compliance with COVID-19 guidelines. Members enjoyed coffee mornings, especially meeting up for a chat while enjoying coffee and a scone. Cinema mornings also proved popular and films watched were Respect and last week Spencer. Social distancing was observed in the cinema and a cuppa was provided for the viewers. A Bowron making course was held in Brúnaithí, all very enjoyable and productive. In conjunction with Brúnaithí, digital training courses are being held. A grant was provided by Comic Relief. Digital training enables participants to use mobile phones and tablets efficiently. Brúnaithí members instructed Yara members, and when local volunteers were looked for, 8 people came forward. In this way, those who have acquired IT skills through the course are able to assist new learners. As a result, the community becomes more self-sufficient and doesn't have to depend on instructors from Cork. Some wonderful outdoor events took place in Green Park. The picnic in the park was a huge success on a memorable afternoon. The audience enjoy the music and banter by Mick Mangan and Mark Ansborough. Delicious refreshments were supplied by the committee. Blackwater Valley Opera Festival held a free concert and was also very enjoyable. Health awareness is a very important topic and was also included. A monthly dementia cafe was held at the Holy Family in Yall. An Alzheimer's support course was introduced by Amy Murphy, dementia advisor with the Alzheimer's Association of Ireland. A cardiac response course took place in the Holy Family Hall. Participants were advised on how to cope with sudden cardiac arrest and how to call the ambulance. Just recently, an art and craft course was held by Áine Scanlon and the members enjoyed making baubles. None of these activities could be held without our generous sponsors: Cork County Council, Yall Credit Union, HSE, Cork Sports Partnership and Comic Relief Fund. We are truly grateful to Phyllis and Frank and the Committee of Yarra for their enthusiasm and generosity in providing the active retired of Yall with such a wide range of activities. The friendship and support is so beneficial to all members.
And so we come to the end of our show. On behalf of Ken, Geraldine, Helen, Tommy, Pat, Frank and myself, I would like to thank you for listening and for your support and comments. A huge thank you to Linda and her team and all the very kind staff in CRY. At the end of a very challenging year for Yarra, I would like to take this opportunity to sincerely thank our committee and especially all our members for their generosity of spirit, camaraderie, encouragement and support for anything we organised. We wish you, our listeners, happiness, peace, wellness, hope and lots of laughter this Christmas, and we look forward to meeting you all again in 2022. And now to close, we have Tony Bennett, Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout. I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. With little tin horns and little tart drums, rooty toot toots and rummy tum tums, Santa Claus is coming to town. And curly head dolls that toddle and coo, elephants, boats, and kitty cars too, Santa Claus is coming to town. Kids in girl and boy land will have a jubilee. They're gonna build a toy land town all around the Christmas tree. Better watch out, better not cry, you better not howl. I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town.